This is VSiN Prime Time, live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Fast times in Edmonton tonight. 3-2 Oilers lead the Panthers, and we still have 4-plus minutes to go in the first period. Leon Draisaitl just scored, assisted by Connor McDavid, and the Oilers have the lead 3-2 after falling behind 1-0. Sam Bennett had the first goal, 2:07 into the game tonight here at Circus Sports. A goal in the first 5 minutes, yes, plus 185. A goal in the first 10 minutes, yes, minus 155. Panthers total goals, 2.5. Right now, Panthers stuck on 2. Oilers total goals tonight, 3.5. Oilers have 3. Alternate game total, 8.5. If you played that over, you could have played that at plus 385 tonight. Over 8.5. That might get there. 3-2 late in the first period. Stanley Cup Final Game 2. Will Hill, Matt Youmans here on VSiN Primetime. Will, how about this start tonight between the Panthers and the Oilers? Connor McDavid still not lighting it up in terms of goal scoring, but Leon Draisaitl on the assist for McDavid. And we have 5 goals in the first 15 minutes.
Is this an all-star game or a Stanley Cup final game? This question is bizarre. And I joked earlier when it was 2-1 and we were like eight, nine minutes left in the first period that the over-under for the game was 6, not for the first period. Well, we might be headed for 6 in the first period. Just a lot of fireworks here at the beginning. I don't know. With all of this scoring, is this a good time to jump in on Florida? I like the Oilers before the game for a small bet, so I'm just going to root home for my Oilers bet here. But this has been a fun series so far, and I don't think the scoring has stopped. Live total 9.5 in some spots, just very bizarre to see for a Stanley Cup final game.
Yeah, right now Edmonton with the 3-2 lead. If you laid the puck line with the Oilers minus 1.5, that's plus 105. And the money line, Edmonton minus 245. That's a live number at DraftKings. Plus 185 on the Panthers. Plus 190 now as I speak here with 3 minutes to go. Plus 190 on the Panthers. I could only take a plus price in a game that's this wild. By the way, there was a lot of money on the Panthers. We talked with Chuck Esposito of the Red Rock Sportsbook in the first, right before the game started tonight. And it was consistent. If you looked at the betting market, Edmonton was about a minus 125 favorite, and Florida closed. That was the opener. Florida closed as a favorite here at Circa, also at a few other books out there. And Chuck said briefly Florida flipped to the favorite at the Red Rock Sportsbook tonight. So Panthers lost game one, drew the betting support here in game two, but now trail 3-2 late in the first period. Money line now Edmonton minus 230, Florida plus 175. But the total, the big story as well, the adjusted total now 9.5. That under minus 135. If you played the alternate game total here at Circa before the game, over 8.5, that was plus 385. We got 5 goals already. We'll see if the game slows down a little bit. But 3-2 is where we stand in game two of the Stanley Cup final. Chuck said it. He thinks the series is going to go 7 between Florida and Edmonton. I wouldn't be a bit surprised by that. Kind of felt that way from the start. It's the rematch of last year that also went 7. Panthers won the first 3. Oilers won the next 3. And then Florida was able to grind out a win in game 7. Will Hill, as we look at the NBA Finals and the Pacers pull off another improbable comeback in game 1, how deep do you think this NBA Finals series is going to go? And do you still have a lot of confidence in your OKC Thunder?
I've lost a little bit of confidence in my OKC to sweep bet. That one is not looking as good after the fact. Like I said in the beginning, pretty embarrassing when you pick a sweep and they lose the game for the first game. But, I was pretty annoyed last night after a day. You know what? Can't beat myself up too much. 80-90% of the game looked like what I expected. And most people picked Thunder and 5. I picked it Thunder and 4. So I'm not going to beat myself up too much, but it does. Now you feel like an idiot when you pick a sweep. This is why people don't pick sweeps, because you know what? You pick it in 5, it flies under the radar. You pick a sweep, it stands out, and then you lose game 1. It looks really stupid. I think the Pacers probably get another game. If I had to, pin a number on it now, Thunder in six here. But I don't know that Indy, unless they clean up the turnovers here, I still think it's a tough matchup for them. They're not going to shoot 46-47% from 3. This point going forward, that's a tough thing to sustain, to repeat. give them all the credit. I don't love the idea of sitting here with my money tied up betting against them. They're no fun to bet against. They never stop competing. They never stop hitting threes. Halliburton has just become one of the great clutch players of this generation overnight, really, the last few weeks. So I didn't bet game two. If I had to take it or lay it, I would take the 11. But right now I'm probably centered on Thunder in six if I had to choose an exact score here.
Well, that would be okay with me. I've got Thunder in six at plus 450. I've got Thunder in seven at 5-1 for a bit smaller bet.
You're in good shape.
Yeah, pretty good shape. But I'm telling you what, it's not going to surprise me at this point if the Pacers win the series. And the big one of the big talking points for me before, prior to the series, why I thought the Pacers could take this deep is three-point shooting. Indiana, the number one three-point shooting team in the playoffs at 40% going into the finals. Last night, 18 for 39, 46% in game one. OKC Thunder in the playoffs, 33.6% going into the finals. Will, last night, Thunder missed a bunch of open looks, 11 for 30, 36.7% from three. So we saw the three-point disparity right there in game one. 18 makes for the Pacers at a higher percentage, 11 makes for the Thunder. Now, your point about the turnovers, we've talked about that a lot too. If the Pacers are going to turn it over 18, 19, 20 times in the first half, you're not going to win. You're rarely ever going to win a game like that. I think the Pacers obviously will clean up the turnovers, and they did last night in the second half. Have we overrated this OKC team? We've talked about how elite this team is defensively. Have we overrated this OKC team a little bit on the offensive end of the floor? Because I've got a question for you, and I want you to answer it. When you look at all the great NBA championship teams over the past however many years you want to go back, 40, 50 years, whatever you give, almost all of those teams had a great 1-2 punch. Who is the Thunder's second-best player?
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point. It just depends night to night. Williams or Holmgren. Holmgren really was neutralized, I thought, by Turner a lot of times last night. Turner played a really good game defensively and hit some clutch shots. Your point is well taken. I don't know. Was the Warriors, when they won it, when Klay declined, the 21 run, Wiggins was probably their second best player. So you can't overcome it. Jaylen Brown and Tatum. Jaylen Brown's a good player, but he's not like a great player. So it's a valid concern. It's a valid concern. I think we're probably headed back 1-1, and who knows? We'll see. We'll see if OKC, they're going to have to get one at some point on the road. They haven't been a great road team, so this finals has some excitement. I think if OKC won the first two, it would have just been a matter of how many games they wrap it up in. People wouldn't have believed. Now that OKC has lost home court and it's 1-0 Indy, this is going to be a lot of fun. This should be exciting, and I'm excited. It's a fun tempo, the running, the shooting. Carlisle's a great coach. I don't think Carlisle gets enough credit. Coach those Pistons teams that would muck it up. Then coach Dallas and Luka and Dirk. Now he's coaching the Pacers. He can coach any style, any sort of roster. He is an underrated coach. You made the point before the series. That's why you like the Pacers more than most. He is just a tremendous, tremendous basketball coach.
Yeah, I thought the three-point shooting edge and the coaching edge were the two things the Pacers had going for him going into the series. And I really thought the coaching edge stood out last night as well, as did the three-point shooting. Second-best player for the Thunder, most would say Jalen Williams, the former Santa Clara Bronco. Williams was not that great last night, though. 6 for 19 from the floor, 1 for 4 from three. I thought Lou Dort was great, actually, for OKC last night, Will. Former undrafted player out of Arizona State, a great two-way player, better on the defensive end of the floor. But last night, Lou Dort hit 5 threes. 5 for 9 from three, had 15 points. He was the Thunder's second-best player. I like Alex Caruso as a support player. Chet Holmgren stunk last night. Holmgren's going to have to show up with a much better effort in game two. But again, the Pacers win 111-110, outscored the Thunder by 10 in the fourth quarter last night, come from 15 down to win it, and do something similar to what they did to the Knicks in game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. Very similar with Tyrese Halliburton hitting the winning shot. Well, right now, here at Circa, exact series result. Pacers win in four in a sweep, 25-1 odds. Probably not going to bet that. Pacers win in five, 18-1. Not going to take that. Pacers in six plus 620. Pacers in seven at 10-1. How about Thunder in five? You picked the Thunder in a sweep. If they win the next four, Thunder in five plus 290, about 3-1 odds. Thunder in six plus 305. Thunder in 7 plus 265. If you bet that right now, what would you play? Thunder in 6 or 7?
Thunder in 6 plus 305. And now remember, you're not getting the payouts after game 1 that you get before game 2 a lot of times, just because you got one game and you got one fewer option for for what can happen. So Thunder in 6, I think the Pacers get one more, but look, I'm very hesitant to open my mouth and start betting against this Pacers team. But if you want to bet smarter this football season, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get a full year for just $199 plus a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by Josh Applebaum, a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making smarter NFL bets. Sign up now and get instant access to a daily email with all the best bets from hosts and their guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 access on the VSiN Watch app, plus our 25-26 NFL betting guide dropping July 1st. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe and use the promo code BOOK. That's VSIN.com/subscribe.
All right, the college baseball Super Regionals are underway. I talked with Paulie Howard and Mitch Moss on the way out of the studio. They're fired up to go to Omaha. I've not seen many people fired up to go to Omaha, Nebraska in my lifetime, but Paulie Howard is really jacked up to go to Omaha next week. It's an early last call, by the way. I think 12:30 still in Omaha is the last call, so if you're headed there, be prepared for that. College Baseball Super Regionals underway. We're going to get best bets from the Professor Aaron Moore, who's got an asinine, off-the-wall opinion about the Tennessee-Arkansas series. We come back here in a couple minutes.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, Will Hill, Matt Eumanns here. We're going to talk college baseball with the professor. Again, update from the Bronx. Yankees 8, Red Sox 2, top of the 6. A lot of people care about this Red Sox-Yankees game. Don't underestimate the number of people who care about that game tonight. Will, can you name the coaches, the baseball coaches for Tennessee and Arkansas?
I cannot, but I have a feeling our next guest can.
And he's gonna do his best to try to hype up this college baseball super regional matchup between the Volunteers and the Razorbacks. So let's go to the Progressive guest line and welcome in the professor. Follow him, Pub Relation Prof. Aaron Moore, VSiN contributor with us now. Aaron, sounds like you've been hitting the bottle tonight. Your opinion is that Tennessee-Arkansas is a much bigger baseball series than the Yankees and the Red Sox. How do you explain that?
Okay, let's first start off. Dave Van Horn, coach of Arkansas, his former assistant, Tony Vitello, who won the national championship last year, he's the coach of Tennessee. These two guys don't particularly like each other at this moment. Their two teams don't particularly like each other. That's college baseball. So let's move to Major League Baseball. For the 35th time, the Yankees are playing the Red Sox in early June. Whoever wins this series, yes, it's great. People in New York can be happy. People in Boston can be happy. But both of those teams can make it in to Major League Baseball's very expanded playoffs. However, the Super Regional, two out of three, these two teams play each other. One of them is eliminated, and the thing about it is one of them being eliminated is a true national championship contender. So this game right now, or this series, I should say, right now, one winner, obviously, is going to possibly be the national champion. The other, the loser, is a national champion would-be that never even got to Omaha.
Wow. Get your popcorn ready. I can't wait. Tennessee, Arkansas, what a convincing case you just made there for that. Will, I'm going to ask you again, do you know the names of the coaches for Tennessee and Arkansas baseball?
I still don't know. From like 90 seconds ago, I still couldn't get figured out.
I wondered if you were paying attention or not. Aaron Moore, so the winner of this Arkansas-Tennessee Super Regional in Fayetteville is going to be in great position, you would think, to go go to the College World Series in Omaha as one of the favorites, right? Is that kind of the big case you're making, too, is the winner of this has got a legit shot to win the national championship?
Absolutely, and yeah. I think if we look at it from a futures board standpoint, right now all the books have taken the futures board off because these games are going on. But what you have prior was Arkansas is about a 3.5, 4-1 favorite. They're at the top. And then there's Tennessee, who's in that 6-7 ballpark because it's contingent on who wins this game or who wins this series. So it's kind of interesting. Maybe the books open the board up tomorrow. If you like Tennessee to win the series, you might as well put a little bit on them to win the College World Series. I like Arkansas in this situation. I took Arkansas to win the Super Regional. You can get them in the ballpark of minus 140 to minus 155. I think it's a really good situation. Besides the whole idea of the hype of these two teams not liking each other, Arkansas is a very good hitting team. It's going to be really interesting to see Arkansas's offense. What they're going to do, Tennessee, is start Marcus Phillips in game one, the power righty, and then in game two, it's lefty Liam Doyle, who very likely could be the first pick in the major league draft. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting. You've got great offense on both teams, and you've got power arms by Tennessee, and you've got lefty Zach Root starting for Arkansas. He's their number one.
North Carolina beat Arizona 18-2 today in the opener in the Chapel Hill Super Regional. Florida State and Oregon State now tied at 4. Louisville beat Miami of Florida 8-1, and Coastal Carolina and Auburn just underway. Will, you want to take it away, get some best bets from the professor?
Yeah, let's go back to that Florida State-Oregon State game because I flipped, slipping around and watching baseball. I think you had eyes on it, Aaron. We had a crazy rally here. We're now in the 10th with Oregon State, a minus 175 favorite. Florida State batting with two outs. How did we get here? What was the comeback?
So what is interesting with this, Will, is to look at it, that Florida State did not start their number one pitcher. And that's one of the interesting aspects of this game is if it's Oregon State, they've got to win. They were down 4-1 in the bottom of the ninth inning. They got a two-out single, tied it up 4-4. Looked like maybe they were going to win it. The final out was on the wall. So right now you've got Florida State with two outs, a runner on first base. Really interesting how this game's going to go because you know for Florida State tomorrow, they've got Jamie Arnold pitching, and it's going to be very difficult for Oregon State to beat him if they're up one or down one.
How about the game that just started here? Auburn was like a minus 200 favorite with total 10.5. Looks like two outs bottom of the first here. Auburn a sizable favorite. What do you think of this game, and how do you compare that to the Lakers-Celtics rivalry?
The Auburn-Coastal rivalry. All right, let's go to this one, Will. You've got the number one mid-major in Coastal Carolina. They're starting Cam Flukey, the power right-hander. This kid will be a major league pitcher, might even be a major league all-star. Keep your name out there or keep your name or your paying attention to Cam Flukey. Keep that name in the back of your head. He's going against Auburn, which obviously we talk so much about the SEC in college baseball. Auburn is one of those teams that we just don't talk about compared to Arkansas and Tennessee and Georgia and these other ones. So it's interesting. Auburn's one of the few standing SEC teams. They're pitching Sam Dutton, another right-handed power pitcher. Interesting game. From the standpoint of this, you've got the upstart mid-major and you've got the power conference Auburn. It's going to be very difficult for Coastal to win this series out there on the plains.
Aaron Moore, the professor, VSiN contributor, sports media professor at Pub Relation Prof. If you want to follow him, we're talking about the most important sporting event in the world, college baseball super regionals. And how much action do you have headed this coming up this weekend, heading into Saturday?
Well, it's interesting. What I have are betting on series, betting on individual games, the whole College World Series futures. It's really why I'm a proponent, guys, of betting college baseball. You can do it in so many different ways. So I have Arkansas futures. Also took a little on Tennessee when their odds ballooned up to, I think it was about 12-1, took a little piece of them. So going back to that Arkansas-Tennessee standpoint of betting and hedging and futures, that I really think if you have one of those two teams, you bet on them with the anticipation they're going to win the national championship. So now that they're facing each other before Omaha, I really think you have to hedge and go on the other side, because certain bets we make on the future standpoint, we do some, we throw a little money on it. Hopefully we make some money down the road. If you bet on either Arkansas or Tennessee, you're expecting them to win the national championship. So I think you got to get something out of that ticket. So I took a little bit of Tennessee to cover my Arkansas bet.
Aaron Moore with us. College baseball is the topic. Super regionals underway on Friday night and more coming on Saturday. Aaron, how do you explain UT San Antonio taking out Texas? And how do you explain Vanderbilt getting taken out, number one overall seed? How do you explain those huge upsets in the opening week?
So obviously very huge upsets. There were some signs, though, ahead of time. Texas had a lot of injuries coming into this game, and they blew that lead to Texas San Antonio. They had a late lead. They blew it. They never recovered, so maybe they never recovered mentally or physically, but I think their injuries caught up to them. But Vanderbilt, you could say maybe in all of the times you look at college baseball or college basketball, there might have never been a weaker number one overall seed. And Vanderbilt was a very good team in terms of pitching. They could throw seven or eight really good pitchers out there. They struck out a lot of their opponents, but they hit about 260, and the hitting was an issue. And it comes into that game, and we saw what happened with Wright State, where they challenged them, and then obviously they couldn't do it again the next time. So not surprising, but at the same time, boy, I wish I bet against Vanderbilt in that situation.
Hey, we got Mitch Moss, Paul Howard, I think Stormy Bonantonio, JVT, I believe Derek Stevens, Mike Palm, Bill Lady, the whole group headed out to Omaha next week for the College World Series. How about the professor? You going to jump on the plane? You going to be out in Nebraska?
Unfortunately, I will not be in Nebraska. I will be in the great state of Florida. As much as I like college baseball, boy, I'll take Florida over Nebraska any day of the week.
All right, Professor, best of luck with your bets this weekend. Thanks for the spot here on a Friday night.
Thanks, guys. Good luck to you.
Will Hill and I update Red Sox-Yankees. Some people do care about this series, and guess what? The Red Sox are trying to make a comeback. They are rallying in the sixth inning in the Bronx.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, Yankees up big tonight, but trying to blow the lead in the Bronx. Red Sox had a chance for a bigger inning than they finished with here. Red Sox scored three in the sixth, cut it to 8-4. But Boston had runners on second and third, and that's when the rally died. So middle of the sixth, Yankees hold on to that four-run lead, Will, as we head to the bottom of the sixth. And Will Warren knocked out of the game. Yankees starter went 5 1/3, four earned runs, six strikeouts, but he walked four tonight and gave up a homer. And now the Yankees are going to have to sweat this out. Good news for you. You got the over nine. Your best bet tonight in baseball hits.
That's the one good thing about – one of the good things about betting the over, really in baseball, but any of the sports. There's no bad – once you're there, you're there. It's no OKC blowing a game or something. The runs can't be unscored. So, yes, nice to cash those. Some of these books, especially on the East Coast, as soon as your bet clinches, as soon as the – say you have over nine, as soon as the 10th run scores – that money goes into the account, which is nice, which I get it from their perspective, too. They want you betting more stuff, so that is nice when you see the money hitting the account middle of the game.
Did you see this story? Yankees broadcaster Michael Kay went off on Mets fans. Kay, I think, reported at some point that Juan Soto really wanted to re-sign with the Yankees, whatever it was, something. Michael Kay called Mets fans ill-informed nitwits. And there's a story in the New York Post where he went off on Mets fans today. Juan Soto starting to turn up the heat a little bit. He's got 11 homers. He hit a homer off Clayton Kershaw in the series against the Dodgers. And batting 229 at this point, still below expectations. But I don't know. I always believed that Soto wanted to sign with the Mets. He kind of wanted out of Aaron Judge's shadow. And as I say that, I'm watching Paul Goldschmidt hit one of those classic Yankee Stadium home runs. It was a high drive that just kept drifting and drifting and lands in the first row in right field. Solo homer number 7 of the season for Goldschmidt. Yankees lead 9-4. Soto took the $765 million over 15 years from the Mets. Expectations high, off to a slow start. A lot of grumbling in New York about Juan Soto and his slow start. Did you read the story about Michael Kay and his feud with Mets fans?
Just saw the headlines. Doesn't surprise me. He can be a Yankee homer, a Yankee shill.
Of course.
And I think this Soto signing really cut the Yankees fans deep in a way that's just different. They're not used to, they're used to, all right, they lose a player to the Red Sox. They view the Red Sox as almost an equal. The Mets are the little brother. They're always, they can thumb their nose at the Mets. The fact that they don't not only lost a player, but lost one of their own players in free agency, said, you know what, thanks for the times. We went to the World Series together, but I'm going to go play for that other team in New York. That bothers a lot of the Yankee fans, so I think that's where a lot of this animosity comes up, and Kay is basically a Yankee fan.
Yankees won 2 of 3 against the Mets in their first series this year after the Mets went 4-0 against the Yankees last year when Juan Soto was in the Bronx. 9-4 right now, Yankees lead the Red Sox. So Aaron Judge tonight, 3-for-4, batting .398. Rick Pitino was out at Yankee Stadium last night to throw out the first pitch. Did a respectable job. His first pitch was not as impressive as Derek Stevens' first pitch at the West Sacramento A's game about a week or two ago. Derek Stevens, much better first pitch than Rick Pitino had. But Pitino had some interesting comments on Aaron Judge and where his Yankees career is headed. Let's roll the tape.
You've coached a lot of great players. What do you think of Aaron Judge and what he's doing from afar?
I'm not sure that Aaron Judge is not going to have the type of legacy that Ruth and Gehrig have had. You know, he's quite special. And I don't buy into anything about the postseason. He'll have great postseasons as well. And I hope it's this year.
Ruth, Gehrig, Judge. Well, what I would say is you got to win a World Series or two before you belong in that same sentence with those guys.
And you have to separate his postseason from the regular season. I agree with Pitino. Mm-hmm. If he's in the playoffs long enough, if he makes it enough years, eventually he's going to have one of these. A-Rod had it. Bonds had it. Those guys all struggled in the playoffs until one year they got there and they just absolutely dominated. Judge is going to have one as long as, you know, he's not young anymore, but give him another 3 or 4 years in the playoffs in his prime like this, he's going to have one. I think he might have been on his way to doing it last World Series when the Yankees started dropping the ball, himself included, because he had a home run and I think a double in that game 5. He was starting to finally swing the bat well. But you have to separate the regular season from the postseason. The regular season, Aaron Judge is on that Bonds, Ruth, et cetera. No, nobody's Ruth because Ruth was out-homering the league, but your point is correct that you can't have the lack of postseason success and be put on that level. But as far as a regular season player, he is that dominant. And I hate to use lack of postseason success against him because it's, man, he's such a great performer. People can, he doesn't do it in the play. Okay, I mean, it's a fair point. You really don't have a comeback for it. But he's just so far and above the second best hitter in baseball. It's not even close. He's such a dominant player.
Yeah, I think what's going to be burned in the memories for a lot of people is what happened in the playoffs and the World Series and Judge. Until he has a big postseason to kind of wipe those memories away, he's going to be stuck with that. You're going to have a big postseason. You're going to have to win a World Series before people can talk about you in the same sentence with Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and some of the Yankees greats. And again, the Yankees have not won a World Series since 2009. It's really amazing when you think about all the droughts, championship droughts, for all the New York teams. Aside from the New York Liberty, the New York teams have gone through a long dry spell of championships. Yankees go back to 2009, the last time they won it. But I know you believe they got a great shot to win the American League this year and get back there, largely because The American League is a little bit watered down as I'm watching Jazz Chisholm steal third, and the Red Sox down 9-4 to the Yankees here in the bottom of the sixth inning. You can talk about Gehrig, Ruth, Judge. How about Mickey Moniak? He hit a homer tonight for the Colorado Rockies. And, Will, don't look now, but the Rockies lead the Mets 1-0 in the fourth. The red-hot Rockies trying to win four in a row.
Them winning four in a row, that is – What is that money line rollover parlay pay? What were the odds at any point the Rockies having a four-game win streak when we saw what they put on the field? It just goes to show you baseball is the worst. You know, the worst teams, the best teams. It's such a long season. You're going to see the strangest streaks in the Rockies. We're not there yet. I don't think they'll win this game, but them winning four in a row, man, that's anyone trying to martingale that has had a rough week here fading the Rockies.
Looks like the Mets got a runner on third with two outs. But, yeah, Rockies up well, 1-0. And, again, the Mets closed. Obviously, huge favorite tonight here at Circa minus 260. At DraftKings minus 280, total 10.5. Only one run on the board so far. Still in a rain delay in St. Louis, so Dodgers and Cardinals not yet underway. And pretty much everything else in baseball underway at this point. But, again, Will, you and I don't have much betting action on the game tonight. I just got a text on the baseball card tonight. I got a text from Lou Finicaro, Uncle Lou, handicapping and betting the Stanley Cup Finals. He just says, Connor McDavid playing on a different level, playing a different game, like Bobby Orr tonight. McDavid assisted on the last goal for Leon Draisaitl, and it's still 3-2 now. Oilers on top of the Panthers early in the second period. The live number of DraftKings, Oilers up by one, minus 250. Take back on the Panthers, plus 190. Total now down from 9.5 to 8.5, shaded over 8.5 at minus 145. If you want to lay the puck line with the Oilers, minus 1.5, it's plus 120. Well, it's kind of tough to recommend anything here. It feels like we've got a long way to go in this hockey game. It's going to be back and forth.
Yeah, I like the Oilers before the game, small bet, so I'm just going to sweat that out. I don't know what I would play if I had nothing. You're right. Hard to come up with anything live. Line looks about right. Nothing I really see is actionable here.
Yeah, I've got the Oilers in the series. I was hoping they could win tonight, but again, a lot of money in the market on the Florida Panthers. I stayed away from this game, and then we'll see how it turns out. But we are about 7 minutes into the second period, no goals scored here. It's been a long dry spell with no goal. I think we're talking about 12 minutes of game time when we had five goals in the first 15 minutes. A couple of games I do want to mention are going to be soon to start here on the West Coast. Mariners and Angels in Anaheim. Looks like Miller and the Mariners minus 115, total of 9. Orioles and A's in West Sacramento, and the J.P. Sears and the A's, who are off a win. They were 1-21 in their previous 21 games, 1-20 in the previous 21 before they got a win. Home dogs tonight, Orioles minus 115, total of 10.5 in that game in Sacramento. Start your day with an edge and a game plan. The VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast, your first look at the day's betting lines, sharp action, and market movement. In just 15 minutes, you get everything you need to know to make smarter wagers and stay ahead of the line moves. Hosted by VSiN's team of trusted betting experts, the Daily Morning Bets podcast is fast, focused, and built for bettors like you. The sharpest way to start your betting day, the VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast. Don't forget about the college football podcast. Tim Murray has been cranking out podcasts on a weekly basis here to get ready for college football. And I know those get a lot of downloads. One of the highest rated podcasts of VSiN, the College Football Betting Podcast. Back in a couple minutes on VSiN Primetime.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Yankees 9, Red Sox 4. How about Panthers, Oilers tied at 3? Back and forth game. If you took the plus 180 or so with the Panthers, you're back in business. And, Will, looks like this is going to be a wild one tonight in Edmonton, game 2. Oilers up 1-0 in the series. They were just up 3-2 in the game. You blink, you're going to miss it. These goals are scored at a rapid pace tonight. Right now it's sitting on the total of 6 and we are at the 10-minute mark of the second period.
My guess would be there's going to be another goal scored because K&N 3-3. Yeah, it's you know, in football, they call this last team with the ball wins. I don't know what the expression is in hockey, but this has been a lot of fun. Game one was exciting. This has been outstanding. So can't ask for much more. Two pretty evenly matched teams, a lot of action, a lot of scoring. So been a fun cup final. If we get five or six more like these, we're going to be in for a hell of a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, think about what we've had so far. Stanley Cup final game one, outstanding. Goes to overtime. Oilers win 4-3. Game two tonight, 3-3 in the second period. This looks like it's going to be another great one tonight. NBA finals game one is a classic. Pacers come from 15 down, 9 down in the final 3 minutes. Win the game, steal one on the road in OKC. Really, NBA and NHL finals both off to great starts here so far. Knicks knocked out last week by the Pacers. Tom Thibodeau loses his job. Don't cry for Tom Thibodeau. I know a lot of people have been whining he was treated unfairly, blah, blah, blah. Hey, look, the guy signed an extension last year for 3 years and $30 million. The extension has not even kicked in yet. It's guaranteed. Thibodeau's going to get paid $30 million not to work. So don't cry for Tibbs. Did you feel like it was an unfair firing, or do you think, Will, when you look at it in the NBA, we know all these coaches have a short self-life anyway, that the Knicks determined, hey, to get to the next level, we're going to need a coach different than Tibbs?
I thought it was harsh, and I do understand the sympathy for him. Just look, because there's more than money. He's already going to get, I think Minnesota gave him $100 million. He doesn't need the money. There is a competitive aspect to these coaches where, man, I coached this team 5 years. I was pretty close to a final. I deserve a shot to come back and go again. Who knows where he'll go next? Will he have a chance to win? It's tough. He'll probably just take a year off and just relax and enjoy life, enjoy the money. It sounds like his refusal to use the bench just made Knicks brass think, you know what, there's just a low ceiling with this guy. Compared him to Buck Showalter the other night. He can get you in the playoffs. He can raise your floor. He just doesn't raise your ceiling. And the fact that they went to, who are the two bench guys, Shamit and DeLon Wright, and he waited till game four of the playoffs. It's like, where are these guys all year? Why do you need to run these guys into the ground all regular season? And you almost played them just out of spite. He's got a reputation for being stubborn, stuck in his ways. I don't think it's like the worst decision ever, but I did think it was harsh. I thought he deserved a chance to come back.
Deepest playoff run for the Knicks in 25 years. Tibbs has accomplished a lot there the last few years, and he gets fired. It does seem unfair. And again, we know Tibbs' shortcomings as a coach. Tibbs is not a different coach than he was a year ago. Will, that's my point here. I think the Knicks front office, Leon Rose, the GM, James Dolan, owner, these guys are clueless. You knew exactly who Tom Thibodeau was a year ago when you gave him the $30 million extension. He's not a different coach now, but he just led you to the finals, and now you fire him. Why did you give him the $30 million last year? You knew who this guy was. And now all of a sudden you're like, we get to the Eastern Conference Finals. It's not good enough. We need a new coach. You should have known that a year ago. If, like I said, Tom Thibodeau did not change. He's never going to change. I don't feel sorry for him. Like you said, a little bit of sympathy. I know you're talking about professional sympathy. But, again, there's so many people out there grinding, working 60, 70, 80 hours a week, sure, trying to make ends meet, trying to pay the rent. I'm not going to cry for any guys making $30 million guaranteed not to work. So, anyway, the – NBA coaching profession, great job if you can get it, right? So many times these guys get fired with tens of millions of dollars or 5, 10, 15, 20 million left on a contract and you get paid not to work. It's just one of the dumbest things in sports for the NBA franchises to sign coaches to long-term contracts and then fire them after 2 years and have to just continue to pay off these contracts. The Phoenix Suns have picked a coach. They went with Ott, the assistant from Cleveland. Kind of a curious choice to me. I read his background. I'm not going to say that he's going to be a lock to be a success in Phoenix. The Knicks are reportedly looking at Jason Kidd, trying to lure him from Dallas. Do you like that idea for the Knicks, Will?
I'm indifferent. He's okay. He's okay. Was that the plan all along, to fire Thibodeau to bring in Jason Kidd? I mean, that's a strange one. He's a decent coach. I think he's gotten better since his first couple tenures, but that doesn't move the needle for me. One last thing on Thibodeau. I do think, mm-hmm, it was Zach Lowe maybe writing about this. I think that there's some thought that Knicks brass saw the Indiana Pacers up coach, Indiana Pacers play up front and their coach and their style and said, Can we get some of that? Can we get that level of excitement? Can we get that level of pace? Can we just get 10% more? Because it's hard in the NBA, especially when, you know, they traded all these picks for Bridges. It's hard to get better players. It's hard to improve the players. Maybe you just take a shot and you hope to hit on the hire and get 10% more talent just because of the coaching hire.
Okay.
Seeing Indiana up front maybe drove that home.
All right. So you watched the series. There's no question the Pacers had a deeper roster than the Knicks, right? No question.
Yeah.
I mean, the Knicks definitely have shortcomings on that roster, and they traded 5 draft picks for Bridges, who didn't play
stupid.
All that great.
Terrible trade. So but I don't think the guys like Shamet and Wright are that bad.
I like Landry Shamet, but again, the Pacers had a deeper bench. They got more shooters on the bench. They got a better roster.
Yeah.
So where's the blame to the GM?
Too.
Yeah, they got a better coach, but we knew that last year. We knew last year that Rick Carlisle's a better coach than Tom Thibodeau, and the Knicks gave him a $30 million extension.
I would say, and this was the point, that the Pacers just play such a fun offense. The Knicks are just kind of stuck and stagnant, and they don't do much. It's Brunson. He dribbles the air out of the ball. It's Towns that maybe you can get a little more movement. Again, I thought it was harsh. I was against it, but I did think that was at least an interesting perspective that they saw Indiana and their style of offense and say, you know what, maybe we can take it up a level. I'm just, you know.
I get it, but you knew that. One side of it. You also knew that last year, right?
Completely. Yeah.
It's not a revelation in the past month. You knew all that about the Knicks. You knew all that about Tibbs. You knew all that about the Pacers a year ago. I don't know. So right now at DraftKings, you got odds up for the next Knicks coach. Michael Malone, the favorite, at plus 125. Jay Wright at 15-1. All indications are Jay Wright's enjoying retirement. Former Villanova coach, not going to take the NBA job. Jason Kidd, initially not even listed on the DraftKings odds chart here. Dan Hurley of Connecticut was at 20-1. You know what's interesting to me, Will? If the Lakers are really hot and heavy about Dan Hurley a year ago, why don't the Knicks want him now? Why? Because the Lakers did not want Dan Hurley last year, and that whole thing was a phony. That was all a charade, and Dan Hurley was never going to the Lakers. Don't you find it interesting that Dan Hurley's name's not popping up more here in the Knicks job?
Yeah, that one was squashed pretty quickly. It was pretty clear last year. Auriemma got a raise. Hurley, after winning his second championship, didn't get one. Quickly turned down Kentucky. Couldn't get more money. Said, how do I get leverage back? Let's drag the Lakers into this. Let's get my buddy Woj working. And let's cook up this scheme that there's some Godfather offer coming. And then a couple days later, we couldn't figure it out. I'm going to stay in college. And he gets a new contract from UConn. Very, very convenient. That was right around a year ago to the day, because that was day one of the NBA Finals, where there were a lot of eyeballs on the NBA coverage, which I think was part of this scheme too. It was a scheme.
The Woj bomb was a scheme. There's no doubt about it. We do have Brian Windhorst talking about the next Knicks coach. Let's hear from Windy.
This is one of the more interesting jobs you're ever going to see, because it is a desirable job. They have a very good roster. It is in New York City. And most importantly, it's in the Eastern Conference. And the Eastern Conference right now, the landscape is a lot more friendly than the Western Conference. And so, yes, it's a very desirable job. But then again, this is a flawed roster. The reason that they are no longer playing is because the flaws in the roster were exploited by the Indiana Pacers. And while that roster can be changed, it won't be easy, because they've spent so many of their assets to put this starting five together. They also just ran a gentleman out of there who was their most successful coach in two decades, who had back-to-back 50-win seasons and made the conference finals. The standard that you're going to have to overachieve on is going to be very difficult.
Yeah, wise words there from Wendy. A lot of what he said there, very true, and I agree with him. NBA Finals, Stanley Cup are here. ProfitX is offering the best odds all playoff long. ProfitX is a peer-to-peer sports exchange available in 40-plus states, the first of its kind in the U.S. You will be able to make your sports picks against other groups of fans rather than against sportsbooks. Exchanges guarantee you the best odds on average by 10 to 20%. Even request your own odds. Download ProfitX today with code VSEN. Earn up to $200. And profit cash over your first month. I don't think Tibbs should have been fired. I understand he's got somewhat of a low ceiling. I don't love the offense he runs. I don't like the way he runs his starters into the ground. But you knew all this about him a year ago, and you gave him a 3-year, $30 million extension. The Knicks have clueless clowns in that front office, including the GM. We're going to take a quick break. Final hour of the show tonight on VSIN Primetime, coming up, the Sports Betting Network.